And as we do at this time on most Mondays, we check in with Dan Brotman, our intrepid traveler, who's always been somewhere interesting. But this week, we're going to continue his South American odyssey. We discussed Argentina last week. And this week, I believe, we're going to Lima, Peru, and Quito, Ecuador. Dan, great to have you with me again.
Hi, Simon. Good to be here, and greetings from a new city. I'm in Montreal right now.
Yeah, it must be Monday. It's a different city. Why not? Okay, so reverse. We're going backwards. We're going back to Lima, Peru, and Quito, Ecuador. Where are we starting, Lima or Ecuador? Your choice. What I want to know is about the Jewish communities. Do they exist, and are they of any significance at all?
Absolutely. So there are Jewish communities in both countries, and I spent time with both communities. They have slightly different histories. I started my South America voyage in Quito, Ecuador. And what many people don't know is that Ecuador, during the Hitler years, especially in the mid to late 1930s, was one of the only countries in the world open to Jews. They hadn't restricted Jewish immigration. So, during the years of World War II and afterwards, Ecuador's Jewish population ballooned up to 4,000 members. And, you know, it was quite a primitive country for people, especially German-speaking Jews, because that's most of the community to immigrate to, but they simply didn't have a choice. And what happened after World War II, as I mentioned, they had about 4,000 members. Many people then re-immigrated. So they either maybe went to North America or to Argentina or to Israel. But there were people who immigrated to Ecuador and liked it. And those are the ones who decided to stay. It's a rapidly shrinking community of about 500 members today. Oh, wow. And I spent time at some of their institutions. But what's very sad about Ecuador, and you see a similar trend in Peru, is that Ecuador doesn't have very good universities. So what winds up happening is, you know, the Jewish community is quite affluent. Their children go to good private schools, and they're fully equipped to study overseas. And because the universities aren't good, the Jewish children go to study overseas for university, and then they don't come back because Ecuador doesn't have a great economy. And so basically what's happening in Ecuador is it's becoming an aging Jewish community with very few young people.
Dan, just go back 10 steps for me. Give me a sense of what is the population of Ecuador? Because you mentioned at its height 4,000 Jews, which doesn't sound like a whole lot to me. But are we talking about a particularly small country in South America or just a small amount of Jews?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's a small country and a small amount of Jews. Ecuador only has a population of 18 million today. Obviously, it was smaller during the, you know, World War II. But I mean, for such a remote country on the Pacific Ocean that was quite underdeveloped, 4,000 was actually quite a large number.
That's interesting because, I mean, basically it's one boat or two boats. And if you think that people were trying to flee Europe by the tens of thousands, somehow I would have thought more would have landed there due to what you were saying, that restrictions weren't in place.
Yeah, I mean, and the community basically came about when Hitler came to power. So these are 4,000 Jews from German-speaking countries that basically immigrated there from the time Hitler took power. When I went to the Jewish cemetery in Quito, almost all the names were in German. In fact, some of the gravestones were in German. I met a Holocaust survivor at the synagogue who had escaped escaped Kristallnacht, so he didn't go to a camp. But that is the population in Quito, is German-speaking Jews. But again, the problem with Ecuador is they have incredible infrastructure from the time when they were a larger, wealthier community. And today, their population is very small. They are the victims of their own success. They became so affluent and were able to give their children the best education that the children left and didn't come back. What was really interesting is when I was at the Jewish cemetery in Quito, trying to understand the history of the community, I bumped into a woman who actually happens to be the president of the Chevra Kedisha, yeah. And her mother is the last remaining Holocaust survivor in Ecuador. And so we spoke about why her parents came to Ecuador. And again, they came because it was the only country open to them. I also spoke to a young person who's involved in their local youth movement in the country, and he said it's very difficult. In their youth movement, there's only 15 children who are active.
Oh wow!
So basically, for Jewish children in Ecuador to go to Jewish summer camp, for example, they have to go to Mexico. If they want to do something in a youth movement and be with more of a critical mass, they have to go to neighboring Peru. But basically, there's a lot of questions around what kind of community will exist in Quito in the future, given that all the young people are leaving and it's aging and the economy isn't good. They actually have a drug war happening. It's the government fighting the drug cartels. It's quite violent. What was also interesting, I noticed at the synagogue, was that the intermarriage rate is very, very high. So basically there aren't Jewish people to marry. So people are either marrying non-Jews or there are Ecuadorians converting to Judaism. One thing that was interesting is on the Friday night that we were at the synagogue, which was really, really beautiful, but again, very empty, the incoming Ecuadorian ambassador to Israel was leaving the next day for Israel with her family. We met her. They did a blessing for her. She was an Ecuadorian Christian who met a member of the Jewish community, and she converted to Judaism. And she is one of four Jewish Latin American ambassadors to Israel today. I believe the other ones are Argentina, Paraguay. There's her from Ecuador, and there's one more. And so they have a little club of Jewish Latin American ambassadors in Israel, which she's now joining.
How on earth do they maintain the community assets? I mean, presumably they're shuls, presumably they're some sort of community centers. I doubt if there was ever a school, given the size of the community, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, there is a Jewish school. There
really?
Is a Jewish school.
Wow.
But only 5% or less of the school is now Jewish. It was built actually for Quito. It was a Jewish school, but it was built not only for Jewish people. It was sort of the Jewish community's gift to Quito, a really high quality school, but they teach Jewish studies in Hebrew. Again, the school used to be a much higher percentage Jewish. Today, it's less than 5%.
So interesting.
And so, and you should see the shul. The shul is so big, so new. They have a country club. They have a Jewish country club
for 500
with an enormous,
Jews.
Enormous like Olympic-sized pool. And I mean,
goodness.
You should see the facilities that they have. They actually have multiple shuls within the complex. It's this incredible community complex. But again, the community, that was built 20 years ago, and the community even today is half the size it was 20 years ago. And I actually made a clip on Instagram yesterday that's gotten more than 20,000 views. And what I speak about is how communities invest so much money in buildings and infrastructure, but they don't invest enough in maintaining their Jewish populations. And they find themselves with these enormous structures, but without people to fill them. And that's exactly the situation in Quito today.
That is so fascinating what you have just said, with possibly more relevance to the South African Jewish community than we would like to acknowledge. But maybe we won't go there yet. And at the moment, our numbers, although falling, are nowhere near 4,000. We're still a little healthier than that. This idea of being a victim of your own success is quite a stark one for me. It's quite incredible because it's the absolute opposite of what they would have hoped for at the time. And the thought of
maybe next week we could even talk about Lima. In Lima, it's even more drastic. They only teach the children in English, not even in Spanish, at the Jewish school.
So they're educating them to leave, basically.
Essentially, on one hand, they want to have a strong Jewish community. On the other hand, they're giving them an IB education and teaching them exclusively in English.
Dan, these are tiny Jewish communities. I mean, you talk about 500 in Ecuador. I don't know how many are in Lima. But what I'm wondering is, when you are faced with those kinds of challenges, do you pull together or do you pull apart? What I'm trying to get at is, I don't know, how does one manage to live a full Jewish life in terms of kashrut? How does one agree on what to maintain and not to maintain? That old adage of two Jews, three opinions, does it apply there, or does the circumstance determine that people pull together for the common good?
It depends. I mean, listen, I've been to communities such as Slovenia, which only has 200 Jews, and they've split into four communities of 200 Jews.
Oh, really?
It really depends. I don't think that even becoming a smaller community means that you're going to become more unified. But again, I think the bigger question with these communities is, why didn't they plan for their demographic future? Why, for example, preparing your children to leave? So why, if you're preparing your children to leave, why are you investing so much money in building huge, huge structures? So for example, at the 100%. Jewish school in Lima, you know, Peru has 2,000 Jews, almost all of them are in Lima. The community used to be around 5,000. Their Jewish school was built for 1,000 students.
Oh, wow.
And there are only 200, maybe between 200 and 250 students in the school today. It feels empty. But on the other hand, when you're giving them an IB education and teaching them in English, and it's such an affluent community where they can afford to study abroad, there seems to be a disconnect in strategy. Do you want to have people in these buildings or don't you?
Absolutely fascinating. Leaving the Jews aside for a moment, I'm just interested. I'm admitting I had to go to the map and have a look where Ecuador was. I wasn't quite sure. So I'm now quite keyed up on where Peru is and where Ecuador is. It's a part of the world I know nothing about, Dan. Is it very beautiful? Give me a sense of what it's like physically.
Oh, I mean, physically very, very diverse. So I did a 5-day trek to Machu Picchu when I was in Peru. So Peru has, again, incredible landscapes, mountains. Lima is on the Pacific Ocean. It actually reminded me quite a bit of Sea Point. They have a really, really beautiful promenade. Mm-hmm. Peru, very, very geographically diverse. And again, very well known for Machu Picchu. Ecuador, most tourists that go to Ecuador go for the Galapagos Islands, which are those are the islands which Charles Darwin based his evolution theory on.
Sure.
Not so many tourists go to Quito. Quito is one of the highest capital cities in the world in terms of altitude. So I was quite struggling for breath while I was there. It's very, very high. But they're countries that are pretty frequented by tourists, especially from Europe and North America. But again, most people don't explore their Jewish communities or even know that they have Jewish communities. And they also have other types of communities. So for example, when I was in Japan, Peru has one of the largest ethnic Japanese populations outside of Japan. Many people don't know that.
Why?
So very similar to why the Indians went to KZN. So they went to work in agriculture on the plantations. So they have a very, I went to probably the most incredible, like almost like a Jewish community center, except it was for the Japanese Peruvians in Lima. And I actually spent time with two young professionals who are from the Nikkei community. And I learned a lot about what does it mean to be Japanese in Peru today. These are people who are 3-4 generations in Peru. In fact, one of Peru's most well-known and infamous presidents is Alberto Fujimori, who was of Japanese descent. And Peru, again, just like Ecuador, it's a very unstable country. I believe they have 4 former presidents who are sitting in prison right now. And even during the week that I, 2 weeks that I was in Peru, they convicted another former president, and he is probably going to prison. So there's incredible corruption. They had almost a guerrilla war with the Shining Path in the 1980s. I met a leader of the Jewish community. His father was kidnapped and held underground for a month. So kidnappings were very widespread. So a lot of people left both Peru and Ecuador due to safety. And a lot of young people, you know, don't want to move back after their studies because of political instability. But if I tell you that how opulent their schools are, their shuls, I mean, it's on a scale you would think that these communities had at least 20,000 people.
And why is that, Dan? Do the Jews just do particularly well in fields of commerce, like manufacturing or the professions, the normal Jewish story, or was it something particular in those two countries?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, remember, like, let's look at the example of Peru. Most of the Jews that came to, Ecuador, they came from Germany, Austria, and German-speaking countries. So they were very, very highly educated, even in terms of European standards. And then they were moving to some of the most underdeveloped parts of South America, where the general population lacked in education. So it's different than Argentina, where the Jews fit very much into the middle class and the general population tended to be more educated. So yeah, they're the most educated in Europe, going to one of the most underdeveloped parts of South America.
Wow.
And they did very, very, very well. I mean, they're both very affluent communities, but as I mentioned, they're victims of their own success. Children in Argentina, parents in Argentina on the whole, cannot afford to send their children to university overseas, and they have good universities in Argentina. In Peru and Ecuador, they can both afford to send their kids overseas, and they don't have good universities at home.
So basically what you're telling me, you haven't said as much, but in 20, 30, 40 years, it's doubtful there will be Jewish communities in those countries anymore.
Well, unless they change their priorities. I mean, something that I advised them on was actually creating programs to attract people to relocate to those countries, even as digital nomads for a year. So I gave a talk to the leadership of the Jewish community of Lima, and I spoke to them about, you know, the fact that there are many people who can work remotely from anywhere in the world right now. They want to live in a place with a lower cost of living. And you might find Jewish families, for example, in North America, who would love to take their kids to South America for a year-long experience, send their kids to a Jewish school, work remotely, it's cheaper. And that the Jewish community could actually build a year-long program for digital nomads that want to come be part of the Lima Jewish community. But what I said to them is you have to do something. You cannot throw your hands up and say, oh, we're just going to shrink and die. You know, you see communities even in South Africa in places like PE, where, I mean, when I look at places like PE, that to me looks like the trajectory places like Quito are going in, unless they do something drastic. And it's true that they might not succeed if they try to do a program for digital nomads, but they've got to try, because what is the alternative? The alternative is becoming Port Elizabeth.
Dan, we're going to leave it there, but I love talking to you because you take me to all these fascinating places that I always wanted to go to, but I don't need to deal with the schlep of going there myself. So really look forward to catching up with you next week. We're going to do Montreal, are we?
Yes, we are. Yes, I am. I moved here last week, so I will definitely have more stories next week from additional travels. And by next week, I'm actually going to have a new travel piece out in the South African Jewish Report, which we can hopefully discuss.
Awesome. I look forward to that, Dan.